I'm calling the Writers Advisory Council meeting to order.
Did you hear that?
Did you say anything? First on the agenda is a public comment period. Are there any members of the public who wish to speak tonight? Okay. We do not have a quorum, so we cannot act on anything until and unless we establish a quorum. So I'm going to go ahead with the, in the interest of time, I will go ahead with, skip down to item six, which is the presentation on the Metro Rail Red Line construction, if you don't mind. I'm sure you'd rather go sooner than later. And what I'd like to do, if people don't mind, is picking up some education from our October meeting on parliamentary procedure. What I'd like to do is, after Mr. Tripp speaks, I'd like to go around once with everyone asking one question, and then if we have sufficient time, we will go around a second time. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us this evening. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about the exciting work that we got moving towards the red line. A part of that is the establishment of the mezzanine that's required for the purple line interface at Bethesda, in addition to the work at Silver Spring for Bethesda, I mean for the purple line as well. So, you know, when we look at these major construction schedules, you know, the very first thing we say is how do we minimize impact to the passengers? You know, we had originally talked about the waterproofing at Medical Center, which, you know, we needed to do. We had a design put forward for that. And what we were looking at was potentially having maybe a seven-week full 24/7 shutdown for that, which 7 weeks of no service is what we looked at. Obviously, we wanted to bring in other experts from other transit agencies, both engineering and operations personnel as well. So we asked the APTA, the American Public Transit Association, to come in and do a peer review. We were very fortunate to have a number of experts come in, you know, as even from the London Underground came in to be able to provide us with some information. We went through that peer review, and as a result of that peer review, we were able to determine what we felt were commensurate efforts to control the waterproofing on the red line that would not be as impactful to the passengers, you know, that would not require such long-term shutdowns, because we understand, you know, what that happens, not just for the commuters, but for the economic stability of the region as well. So at this point, what I'm going to ask is for Chen Zhou to review our plan with y'all, so you can get an idea of the process that we went to get to this point. And she's been involved in this. She's our senior program manager, is that correct? Or program manager, thank you. Program manager in the IRPG group, and an engineer as well. So we look forward to her providing this.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. I would like to introduce our red line rehab projects to everyone. Like Mr. Troop just described, the major portion of the red line rehab is the medical center crossover waterproofing. This is what looks like in the medical center crossover. Hello? Great. It better? Okay. So this is what it looks like in the medical center crossover. We have, the crossover is located directly south to the station, which is 50 feet wide, 31 feet tall, and 200 feet long. Just picture yourself in the station itself. Station is similar size, but is three times longer than the crossover. Station 600 feet long, this is 200 feet long. In the crossover, you can see the tracks cross each other, so a train can switch tracks from one track to the other one. And then on the wall of the crossover, you can see, you can see all this cables, lights, and the equipment on the wall. If you look at closely, you can see some shining parts. Those are the the drainage system we have been built for the past 30 years. What those function is to redirect the water come from outside and then redirect water and come to the drain over here. So next slide, please. Over the 30 years, water have been keep coming to the crossover. It caused a lot of service disruptions because of the rusted ATC equipment and other equipment, and a cold running rail, and also a luminous flooding for some drainage issue. So we have decided to not only to maintain this system at the crossover, also we want to do a complete rehab of the crossover so we can bring the crossover back to the function, correct function. 2 years ago, Formata engineer came up this idea called the geo-memory system for the waterproofing. So basically, the idea was to build a yellow one, is the geo-memory system, which can block the water coming and redirect to the drain, and then build on the left corner, down there is the lattice girders and shotcrete to support the plastic or geo membrane on the top. So the water can be redirected from existing concrete to the new concrete layer and then come to the drain. This is a successful system which has been used worldwide, including our Silver Line tunnels. However, this system has a huge drawback. It requires intensive service disruptions for 5-week-long 24/7 shutdowns and some other additional weekend shutdowns to build some other system work. The reason for that is when we do the shotcrete and waterproofing, the operation used to be continuous. So we have no choice but to shut down this complete system for 3 stations in red line. And then later on, after the new concrete layer is being built, original concrete liner is not accessible anymore, so we cannot do the further inspection to see if there's structural integrity and all these components. So, yeah. So, if you could go back to the first slide.
Thank
you. This is what we call crossover. So there are 2 straight tracks on each side, and then is X track in the middle. So train can come from one track, go to another track, cross tracks to another one. So it's called crossover.
I thought maybe it was crossing over a road, so cross road was crossing over it. I didn't know. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So we call that whole area called crossover. So so for the first option, geomembrane system, the total cost, including the bus bridge cost, which we're going to provide when we have service shutdowns, will be $19 million, with $10 million bus bridge cost and $9 million construction cost. And we also evaluate the successful rate of the construction by doing the risk analysis. So the risk analyst saying we have 95% of confidence to complete the entire job in 5 weeks. However, due to the huge service disruptions, like Mr. Chup said, we invited experts around the world to reevaluate this option. And then eventually, we came up a new one, which we called precast concrete arch options. So you cannot see, this is our original concrete liner, a big dome on the top. And then we are going to build 2 precast panels, arches, sit on the starter wall over here. So this is called starter wall. So there's 2 starter walls and 2 precast arches. Each arch is about 8 feet tall, so 8 feet long, so we have a total 25 arches. And then we're gonna put the red layer is the waterproofing on top. So when the water comes in on top, it can be drained through the trough over here and then come down along the line to the downspouts, then going to the track drain at the bottom. So that's how we collect the water this way. The total construction step has 8 steps involved. Instead of me trying to explain it, I would like everybody to look at the videos that we created for the construction sequences.
The interlocking at Medical Center is fraught with problems due to water infiltration. The water corrodes the rails, causes arcing insulators, and mud buildup prevents the switch from operating as it should. A permanent solution to this problem would be to waterproof the Medical Center crossover using the concrete precast arch method. The first step involves relocating the standpipe and radio cable from one side of the crossover to the other, followed by raising ATC and power cables by 12 feet from their existing location to prevent interference during construction. Following that, Metro would build the starter walls, which will support the precast arches and require 7 non-consecutive weekend shutdowns to complete. Once the starter walls are in place, we will return the standpipe, ATC, power, and radio cables to their original positions. This process would then be repeated on the other side of the crossover. Once both starter panels are installed, we will erect 25 precast arches over the course of 7 consecutive weekend shutdowns. 2 pieces of specialized equipment will allow us to do this by delivering the arches through the tunnel and erecting them in the crossover. Once all of the precast arches are installed, waterproofing will be applied to further prevent infiltration. The work would then be complete.
So just like the video stated, we are using the 7 weekend shutdowns to build the starter wall, and then we are using the 7 consecutive weekend shutdowns to build the precast arches. So the first 7 weekend shutdowns is not necessary to be consecutive, but the next 7 weekend shutdowns, we need to get that consecutive so we can have all these arches being built in a very professional manner. And then total will be 14 weekend shutdowns. And construction cost is $7.3 million, with the less bus bridge cost than the previous option, which is only $4.9 million. So total will be $12.2 million. And looking at the other advantages is after the precast panels is being erected, we will be able to still access the original concrete liners to see the structural integrity of the liner. And then we'll have a lot less service disruptions as we described. So next slide. So by side by side, look at these two options. Is first, the geomembrane system is better designed for the waterproofing compared to the option two, precast arch panels. However, it costs more for $19 million. It costs $19 million total. And the precast arch is a lot less, only $12.2 million. The service disruption for first option geomembrane is 5 week long, 24/7 shutdown. And for the precast option, we only need to require 14 weekend shutdowns. So service disruption to riders a lot less. So we came to the conclusion that option number two is our preferred options. So, well, we have the shutdowns for the Grosvenor Medical Center and the Bethesda 3 stations for 14 weekends. We want to advance all the other work we could during the shutdown period. So at Grosvenor, we're going to rehab the platform and canopy at station. The Grosvenor, that will go into little details in the later page. And then we're going to do the aerial structural retrofit and some drainage reroute. At Medical Center, we're doing the waterproofing work. And in the same time, we're completing the new mezzanine structure work, which is track rights related for the Poker Line. So when all this red line work is being completed at the same time, later on we can give the tracks to the Poker Line on this one, on the red line, to do the aerial structure over flying over to Metro and then potential mezzanines on the Silver Spring side. So we'll do all this work during the 14 weekend shutdowns. This is what is Purple Line mezzanine at Bethesda going to be look like. So during the shutdown, we'll work on the structural erection together with the parapet wall constructions. Those work require to have track shutdowns in order to deliver the material and erect those structural steels. We'll utilize the same shutdown to perform the work. Then later on, we are going to build some other work like elevators, escalators, communication, architectural work. We'll do that later after the steel structure is erected. So this is the one work we call the Grosvenor Aerial Structural Retrofit. Along the 355 flying over the 495, there are 21 piers, single piers like this, which support the steel girders on the top and trains running on the top, one on this side and one on that side. So over the years, because the train is uneven load on the top, the rocking situation, the grout pad in between the steel girders and the concrete pier is broken. And then the steel bolts is exposed. So there's some fatigue issue over here, which we have to utilize this shutdown. Prior to shutdown, we're gonna build this concrete structure over here. And during the shutdown, we're gonna pour a layer of the grout pad similar like this to transfer the load from the top of the steel girder to a new structure over here, then come down the piers. So we have to use the shutdown to perform the work because pouring the concrete for the grout pad requires there's no movements and no vibration from the track. So we're going to utilize the same shutdown for 14 weekends to build 21 piers we call hammerhead to retrofit the structural work. This is a picture of Grosvenor platform and the canopy. As you can see, there are a lot of cracks on the canopy because of the drainage system over the top was not appropriately designed in the past. And then the platform, we had some concrete spalling and concrete spalling under the platform for the structural portion. And a lot of tile is right now is they are not in the good condition. So we're using the same shutdowns to do the canopy work and also the platform structural rehab work. So in summary, during the 14 weekend shutdowns, we're going to do the Grosvenor station platform and a canopy rehab, Grosvenor aerial structural rehab, medical center waterproofing, and then Bethesda new mezzanine structural erections. After this complete, then the Purple Line can start with all their required work at Silver Spring to do the potential connections at Silver Spring, which they are going to require track rights on the other side of Red Line. So this is our plan, and we plan to have the shutdown starting 2016 August. Somewhere around August in the fall, 2016. So, that's our plan. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any questions? Can you put your plates up so I can kind of get a sense of? Okay. Okay. Deborah Titus.
Matin, right? Is your name Matin?
Chen.
Okay. In order to improve one or two red line things, you will need to work with customer service or someone in every matter to plan the date of closing and need to have a clear logistical plan if people are going to be traveling around the town. If you say you're going to start at 2016 in the summer, this is the time when people are traveling around a lot. Looks like you need a good logistical planning and the way that people can get around the DC area.
Bob.
Thank you. I'm going to have a series of questions, but I'll take them one at a time, and in the second round, I'll ask my others.
Thank you.
Are these problems as a result of deferred maintenance, or are they structural problems that were just built into the system, improperly constructed when the system was?
I don't know that, it's a 40-year-old system.
I'm sorry?
It's a 40-year-old system. The technology that was available then for tunneling is something that all authorities deal with. The designs like the geomembrane design that Chen was talking about earlier, essentially what we do now for the natum designs for the tunneling. So I don't know that it was essentially a deferred maintenance issue that caused that. It just was the technology at the time, the tunneling technology, wasn't able to deal with this. I also think that probably the, they weren't aware of how serious the fractures were, through the area, how serious the hydrostatic and the water would be through that area. So that's kind of what it's a result of. It's a lot of age, just a lot of age on it.
Well, how long has the problem been? How long have you had the problem?
The problem at medical center has been there probably for, 12 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Where we have had, continually clean it up, get the mud cleaned out of it. We're spending a significant amount of money. And the interesting thing there is it's not linear, on something like this. It's exponential. It just, it keeps on getting worse and worse, unless we do something about it. So it's not like I could say, we're just going to continue to, fight it at $3 million a year and leave it at that. It's an issue that just, it keeps on getting worse, which is why we feel we need to do something about it now.
And how confident are you?
No. Frank. Okay.
Sorry.
Mine's a quick and simple question. Just at the very end, you say Purple Line construction begins in winter 2017. Is that January winter or December winter?
A lot of it depends on how the MTA establishes their contracts. Now, we will do the Bethesda mezzanine work, which is a preface to while we're doing in the 2016 period, but the work in Silver Spring, a lot of that depends on when the contractors, when MTA engages their contractors. So I can't say that specifically.
Barbara.
I realize this is a long way off, but what kind of discussions are out there for moving riders?
We'll treat this similar to the way that we do shutdowns right now. We'll continue to do the bus bridges. Again, the communications plans will be put out there. What we will focus on a little bit differently now is that we will have 7 consecutive weekends, for that, which is a little bit different than what we've done in the past, obviously. We've tried to minimize the consecutive weekends that we've had out there. So that'll be one of the differences in our communications plan. We'll be able to communicate that out. But it'll be very similar to, what we do now for the bus bridges, how we communicate those bus bridges to people and get signage.
I have a lot of questions, but I will also stick to one for the moment. The leakage in the tunnel is only at the crossover, and it's only at this particular crossover?
No, there's leakage in the tunnel throughout the tunnels. This is an area that's the worst. The other issue is because this is a crossover, and so that's what's critical. This is where we actually have the switch points that move back and forth. There's a lot of the track circuits are, within that area. It's complicated from that standpoint. There's a lot of machinery, that moves the switches back and forth in there. So because it's such a critical junction point for us, because we can get trains, from one track to another. For example, let's say, unfortunately, if we had a train with brakes in emergency. If we don't have that crossover in service and we have to take a single track in there, the headways would be over 26 minutes. So, it's 26 minutes just to, because now we no longer have that crossover there that we can manage something like that. So we need that crossover not only for emergency management, for regular single tracking events that we have for planned work that we have, doing other things, track work and other items like that. That's why it's so critical at that specific point to be able to have that interlocking functioning. But we do have leakage issues throughout the tunnels. But it doesn't cost us nearly as much money because the complexity, it's just straight rail through there.
Can I add something?
Sure.
While we have the shutdown, we also own the track. We have the track between the crossover to the stations. So we do have the plan and design already developed to do all the water leakage remediation during the shutdown in the tunnel, not only in the crossover, but also in the tunnel as well.
Will that be a similar structure with these precast panels going in?
No, it will be just crack injections. And then some. If there's gushing leaks, we're going to put some type of plug and the drainage reroute. So we are going to treat it. But however, because we still need to have a lot of machinery moving back and forth the tunnel, so we can only do limited section where there's no movement. So.
Fred.
Well, and I think that that's what's, you know, ideal about this project, and particularly as opposed to, say, the geomembrane. We do know, you know, while the geomembrane system presents issues with quality application, you have to be exact on it. This is nice because, first of all, they're precast concrete panels, so they won't be being poured in place. They'll all be precast concrete panels, which, you know, will be able to be controlled in the factory, controlled curing in the factory, controlled quality assurance in the factory. And the team has done, you know, a very good job in analyzing how much all this, you know, this time would, the time would take to be able to do this work. So we have a high confidence level that we can do these work elements in that program time, and the quality will be there.
We have done the risk analysis as well right now for the crossover section, and then also we're looking at the constructability reviews. We're doing our own schedules to see if everything's feasible, which we believe it is. It takes a lot of coordination, but we believe it will be done. Can be done, yes.
Caroline, I'm sorry.
Hi, so I live on the, I take the red line every day, and you know, we've been getting delays all the time, and I get tons of emails, different, you know, delays at different stations. Aside from the obvious related safety issues, which, you know, is probably the main reason why, you know, this is a priority, what would the impact be in terms of delays? And, you know, will this, you know, after all this is done, will there be fewer delays attributed to these two stations, or?
Yeah, the arcing insulators, over 50% of our arcing insulator issues occur in this area, in this specific area, because of the geology of the water infiltration and the calcites that are in there. So, you know, so that in and of itself will help. In addition, again, like I said, for us to be able to manage any kind of issue that we may have, it's, you know, significant for us to be able to use that crossover. So, you know, we do expect that this will help manage delays.
Are there any more first questions? Okay, then Bob, I'll give you a second round, and I think you had some more questions, Catherine. So, Bob, and then Catherine.
So how confident are you that this option will work, and how long do you expect it to last?
We're very confident that it will work. We're very confident it will work. And you know, with we expect it to last for you know, 50 years on this. The nice thing about this is this is similar to what actually is in the station itself. The station itself has a false roof on it. So it's a similar kind of design on that, you know. And what enables us to do is we can get on top of there without disrupting traffic. We can get on top there, redo the waterproofing membrane, redo everything that is up there. So the expectation is that this will take care of the problem for 50 years or so.
Go on.
Okay. On the pier construction on over 355, so you're going to have to shut down the system between Grosvenor and Medical Center?
Bethesda.
Yes, Bethesda.
Grosvenor Medical Center, Bethesda.
Between Grosvenor and Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
because it'll be done at the same time as the work in the waterproofing work?
Correct.
So you'll be busing people from, what, Grosvenor to Bethesda?
Correct.
On the weekends?
Correct. On those weekends we have that we were shut down, yep.
Catherine.
Just clarification real quick. You're busing people to Bethesda or to Friendship Heights? I thought Bethesda itself would be closed.
It will be to Friendship Heights because Bethesda itself is closed.
This crossover is clearly the high priority crossover that you've got in the system, but it's not the only one. There, at least if I'm looking at your map correctly, there's also one that's between Bethesda and Friendship Heights. Is it likely that something similar is going to need to be done with that crossover in the near future as well?
We don't see that as being in the near future, no.
Just the geology is different enough that
it's
the same linkage
where it
issues.
Is, yeah. I mean, it's just, and again, a lot of this gets to the fact, you know, how well we can manage it. Is this the lowest point? Medical center? Yeah, medical center is the lowest point that we have. This is the one that is the most critical, and the other interlockings we can take care of just with the regular cleanings.
What is the difference between the lowest point and the deepest point?
Yeah, same.
Same.
I was under the impression that Forest Glen was the deepest point.
No, but what in these data where the rock creek is surrounding and the water comes through that area.
So what happened is when these tunnels were built through that, and there is a rock creek nearby, so a lot of water filtration came through when these rocks were formed similarly. So what low point in that, between that stretch from Farragut North or Woodley to all the way to Medical Center, the train trajectory or train alignment in such a way that the Friendship Heights crossover is less impacted from the water infiltration than Medical Center. So we're not looking at applying similar waterproofing solution for Friendship Heights. Yes, we do have a leakage problem, but we're able to manage and doing the routine maintenance up there. At Medical Center, it's difficult.
And we have an aggressive, under a capital program, we have an aggressive leak mitigation program. Normally, what you do is do the grout injections, and that helps. You know, that keeps it maintained for a while until the water eventually finds another place to go, and then you grout that. So, you know, that's how you manage that. So we do have an aggressive campaign for leak mitigation, you know, throughout the entire system.
Deborah.
After the red line pass is finished, do you think you're going to continue the same time work in any other metro rail line?
Of this type of project? With the, like, putting in the waterproofing?
Yes.
We don't foresee anything right now like that. And again, most of the tunnels, or the high time would be able to sell, but were a natum construction, again, with the geomembrane, because this is part of the oldest section, the red line. It's a little different technology.
Did you have your hand up? I thought you had your plate up, Brad. Okay. All right. Oh, thank you very, very much. Well, I do have a question. And about 6 to 8 months ago, there was news coverage that made it sound like there was an impending cave-in. There was some kind of investigative reporting. Is it about this particular station, or was it about another station?
The news report. I mean, if that was the impression that it gave, it was inaccurate.
Right.
It was about this station, but that wasn't the context of it. There's not an impending safety issue with this. You know, this is a reliability issue, a significant reliability issue for us that we need to take care of.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
We now have a quorum, so we'll go back and do some of the boring business. Okay. Is the agenda, is there any issue with approval of the agenda? Okay, so we assume the agenda is approved as already amended. Can you look at the past meeting minutes, and I will say that I've read them in detail in draft and made a few minor comments which have been incorporated. So I'd like to have a motion to approve the minutes as written. Second. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes as written?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Right. Okay. Did you get that, James? It was two abstentions. Okay. We'll next go to the committee reports. And I have to apologize because there was a, I didn't close a communications loop, I see. And as a result, something that I'd expected to be in this packet was not, and I should have looked at the packet and not just at the face of the agenda. So I've asked James to put it up on the screen. I'm not going to talk to you about the chair's report, the monthly chair's report to the WMATA Board of Directors, because it was very pro forma. What I'd like to talk about are the comments I made at the October 23rd board meeting, and also what's to kind of update you on what's happened as a since that point. I can't say there's a cause and effect. So if you all will just take a minute to read that. And the reason that you don't have it in your packet is because it's going to be, I made the remarks at the meeting. I then submitted them, and they're going to be sent to the board with their normal packet this Friday. So they will get these formally. So, and I want to thank people who did comment on this. We had it just so happened that on that Monday we had a programs planning and projects committee meeting, and so we were able to get some comments there, and I think some others may have sent in comments. So. Do you know whether Lynn is coming back?
Sorry.
Is Lynn coming back?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can. Is that the end of it?
No.
Oh. I'm sorry. Are people ready to scroll? People pretty much get the drift. Okay. Basically, what happened was that Tom Downs, the WMATA board chair, did put the item on the consent agenda. So there was opportunity for the WMATA board members to have some discussion. Personally, and I've communicated this to WMATA senior staff, to Lynn. I thought Lynn Barisar specifically. I thought that the rationale that Richard Charles gave in the meeting was more on point than some of the information that had been put out and still continues to be put out, namely that he basically directed his staff to come up with a plan that would move approximately anywhere from a low estimate of 250,000 people to a high estimate of 800,000, which is what the National Park Service permit said, but probably about 450,000, about a half a million people, out after a concert that ended at 10 o'clock. So what's not stated in any of the material that I've seen, but what he was concerned about was interfering with the 5:30 a.m. opening on the next day. And so I personally think, and I wasn't trying to speak on behalf of the RAC at this point, that that's a more compelling reason for what seemed at first glance to be some rather draconian measure of closing the blue line. Also, I think one impact that we had by our comments was that members of the board who were there, although they did approve unanimously the plan for reimbursement, which includes the operational plan, so they in effect, by approving the reimbursement plan, approved the entire operational plan as well. They did agree that this was to be considered an extraordinary event. And so, to me, that means that we shouldn't be hearing, next month that, we're going to close down the blue line because, Thanksgiving or something. It has to be, that this is an extraordinary event, one that will not be pulled off the shelf, frequently or, they never said never, but it is not something that they're going to be going to on an automatic basis. And I believe the third thing that has happened as a result, I won't say as a result, but the third thing that's happened after the comments that were made is it looks to me like there is going to be morning service, or as a matter of fact, there's going to be service that I think up until 7 p.m. there'll be train service to Arlington Cemetery. And I don't believe that was in the picture originally. It looks to me that the media is beginning to cover it. I actually heard someone say the words on TV today that the blue line will be closed on Veterans Day. And what Lynn left for us is a brochure that they have made up that's going to be, I think, available. It's already available online, but it's also going to be handed out to affected customers in stations, and specifically, I believe, along the lines that are going to be impacted by it. And finally, one of the questions that I asked, because there's a lot of paper and materials floating around, they're going to make maps and all that, is that in addition to the direct cost of that are going to be reimbursed by the sponsors for this concert, evidently Metro will be reimbursed for the other costs, like the extra printing and overtime required of administrative staff, et cetera. So with that, I'll shut up and take comments or questions. Barbara,
no,
do you have
you
something
let
to
them
say?
Go first.
Frank.
I just want to commend you, Carol, for your leadership on this. It was came up very quickly, and you acted very speedily, very forcefully and diplomatically, and very politically, in terms of that this was not something the RAC had discussed, but you spoke well and appropriately in terms of getting a message across, and I think you've really done a lot of good for the riders because of that. So thank you.
Oh, thanks. Aldea.
The one question that I was reading the article, the interview with Lynn from, I don't know what the publication
right,
was, but it was sent out to us. And it said that the service last year was actually more interrupted than it will be last year, or than it will be this year. That was one of their interview questions.
Yeah. So, I think what she meant, as I recall, that the RAC raised some issues about the fact that there was limited service on Veteran Day, which there usually is, and that usually brings an outcry from customers who are not federal government employees who still have to go to work on that day. So I think in that sense, that's what she meant. I know exactly what you mean. If people, it was the transcript of the Dr. Gridlock interview that Lynn Barisox did on Monday.
So
I think that's what she...
Is it unprecedented, or is it something that happens every year?
It absolutely has never... No line has ever been closed down.
Okay.
That's absolutely unprecedented. I think what she was talking about was a small chunk of the situation, in that service is generally limited on Veterans Day. And do you mind? I didn't want to put you on the spot, but I don't know if people know. This is Caroline from the press office.
Media relations. So, what Lynn was referring to in that Gridlock chat was that
You're going to see more frequent service to Arlington Cemetery on Veterans Day than you normally would if we weren't running this kind of service. It has to do with headways, and because we're running the special shuttle train between the National Airport and Arlington Cemetery, folks who want to get there will have better opportunity and more frequent service this year than they did last. And we have not shut the blue line down typically on Veterans Day, so this is definitely a unique situation. But.
Barbara.
If I want to respond a little bit to what you said. I think there was, it may or may not have been a Veterans Day, but I think it was last year or maybe the year before. What we had was between the cutback and the number of trains, and then it was treated as a three-day weekend, and they did track work, and it was still going on the Monday holiday that half of the city didn't have a holiday for, and so we had extreme crowding, people who couldn't even get on the platforms. There was that sort of incident. Shall I take my turn now? Okay. I'm really concerned on a lot of levels about this. One was that I was refreshing my memory today about the communications of things, and I ran across an article that on October 10th, I think, that said that WMATA had been working with the event planners for several weeks and to try to figure out what their plan was going to be. Yeah, I have that with me. And I'm really disturbed that we didn't find out about this a little bit sooner, a lot sooner, to either have an opportunity to state our points of view and to understand it, to get ahead of it. I'm also concerned about the general pattern of the blue line riders and feeling like second-class citizens don't get peak intervals of service. They don't even, you have to, if you want to go from Reston or Vienna or Tyson's to Arlington or Alexandria or Springfield or anything, you'll have to go through DC and through the Smithsonian during this concert to get home from work, during the time that the people are going to the concert. But I learned a lot during the fair proposals this year. I learned a lot about how we don't expect bus service to be covered financially from the fares as much as we do rail, because we're meeting a need for people that isn't based on dollars and cents, it's based on a need. And I think the blue people feel a little bit abandoned, that their needs don't matter. It's financially not feasible to do things. It's surely on the numbers. Somebody at the time this came up said they really had the sense that the riders were being treated like widgets, not like people, that you'll get more throughput if you do this, which is great on assembly line to go out of the way if it's going to get the trucks loaded faster, but it may not work as well with people. And I think one of the things, at the risk of sounding paranoid, I heard about the medical center work, and I heard that it was going to be, you know, these 14 weekend shutdowns before they would resume revenue service. We are revenue service. And I think that there's some gap in our perception of riders and the terms that I'm hearing and the decisions that are being made. And it's really concerning to me. Most of my comments, you saw that some of those people have seen, you know, the communications have not been really clear. And nobody's really said you have to go through it, whether it starts at 5 in the morning. I heard it started at 5 in the morning or noon, and then I heard, no, it's all day. And even the visual inside the brochure that you have, if you're looking at it online, you come, the first big visual you come to, well, it's not very big here, but it shows, look, it's 17 minutes to go the blue line, and it's 5 to go on the yellow. And I'm thinking, but you can't take the blue line. So it's not 17 minutes. It's you can't get there. So, yeah, I think that I'm looking for communications like we see with track work. We didn't used to think they were very good. We think they're better now. They do a lot of waste. They preach about a good lesson that you have to go to where the people are. And I'm happy to say that Judiciary had a sign tonight inside the on the mezzanine near the near the station, near the
kiosk.
Okay. And but
it had a sign saying what?
It was about I didn't stop, but it was about the paths to get from here to there. So, and I think that I'm hoping that somebody's out in those stations handing these out on tomorrow and the next day, or else people are going to think their Monday commute may be normal, because if I'm not going to the concert, why would I read this? I'm sorry, Tuesday. You're right. You're right. So anyway, I've said more than my share. I think I've said the gist of what I was talking about. I think there needs to be a whole lot of communication, and I'm thinking there's going to be in the next few days. I sure hope. Thanks for indulging me, the cross blue line person.
Fred.
So I hate to disagree with you, but I hope they don't hand these out, because they are unbelievably confusing. For example, it says here, see blue line, I'm in the center here, in case you want to know where I'm reading from. It says, see blue line information to the right, which I assume is this big blue thing. And I challenge anybody to figure out in this column what is happening with the blue line. There's a lot of information here, but a lot of it is irrelevant to the to what people need to know, like how to get from point A to point B. It's like got a lot of words here. It's got a lot of stuff that's really interesting, but has virtually nothing to do with this problem. And I really think, I hope they don't hand it out.
You know, I agree with you. I really, that was the comment I had about it when it was online, not just in a brochure. And I wholeheartedly agree. I withdraw my statement that I hope they're handing it out. But I hope somebody's doing something in the stations. Whatever they're doing, it works. I hope it's in the station.
Well, I was told last Thursday, I believe, that, I was told at the Metro board meeting last Thursday that they were going to start handing out materials at the stations that would be affected on Thursday, which I thought was a bit late, because a lot of people will, you know, between Flexa Place and Flexa Tour, some people will take that as a long weekend, so they'll take Friday and Monday off. And I think telling somebody on Thursday that this is going to happen is coming up a bit short. I definitely think that is true.
Comment? Can I comment?
No, right.
I'll wait.
Wait, you can wait. Okay. Catherine, I want to dig it.
This question may be for you, I'm not sure. Are these final, or are there going to be edits? Are these the exact pieces of paper that are going to be going out, or are there still opportunities to make edits to these? Those are final. Okay. That's what I wanted
to know. But I have to say that I don't think that it's wasted. I mean, since they can update online, if you see something that's glaring, I think it's worth it to send it in through James, because, you know, I've made a couple of comments that way, too. I mean, you know, this is where the tension between us as an advisory group to the board and the WMATA professional staff, you know, there's this natural tension, because I would have had a brochure saying Blue Line will close on Tuesday. And while I understand some of the reasons why that might not have been the best way to do it, I think your point is very well taken. What I've seen, like I live at the Fort Totten station, almost literally, but that's my station. And the first sign that I saw is Concert for Valor. And I think you hit on a very important point. If I'm not going, I ignore it, because I don't think it has anything to do with me and what I'm going to be doing on Tuesday if I'm not going there.
Effectively, what's happening is the blue line is shutting down, but nowhere on this does it say anything like that. It says it says the blue line turns yellow.
It actually turns, you have to like look really hard to do, and you
But what does blue line turns yellow mean? I mean, nobody's going to know what that is.
Please make sure your mics are on. Even if you're making comments, please make sure your mic is on.
What did you say?
Please make sure your mic is on, even if you're making random comments.
One other question I had about this. It says special trains are running between Arlington Cemetery and Reagan, and it might be on here somewhere, and I've just missed it, but I don't know how often those trains are running. I don't know what times those trains are running. I saw something that said that something is running until 3 p.m., but doesn't Arlington Cemetery stay open past 3 p.m.?
No, so, it says special trains. Somewhere in here it says special trains are running from Arlington from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m.
The map. It's on the map.
Okay.
It says service. I don't know if the trains, but between the trains and buses.
It's the buses that are going until 3 p.m. So at 3 p.m. you lose your ability to get from Roslyn to Arlington Cemetery, even though Arlington hasn't closed yet. I guess I'm...
No,
you
look never, at this.
You can never get from Roslyn to Arlington on a train, just a bus.
True, but the buses are departing from Roslyn and Pentagon every 12 minutes from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. So what happens if you're there at 3:05?
Then they have special trains until 7. You have to go all the way around the system.
I guess my question is why the special trains are running later than the buses. Why aren't they ending at the same time? And why aren't both the times that they end the time that Arlington Cemetery closes?
How many people are going to be on the Metro on the 11th? Because I think it would really be good to have some firsthand. No, yeah. No, but I'm just saying, just riding the system, because I think there's going to be
that could still be informative, because you can judge how full or not they are because of the with the rerouting. And
I didn't say. I mean, thank you, Frank, for acknowledging the politics, small p, of this, because it's sort of like if you've ever been reviewing or editing a document and the document is terrible and you go in and you start to try to fix it and you're almost better off starting from scratch. I'm saying I think my issue is with the organizing principle of this information, so it's almost impossible to fix it. The organizing principle is, look, we have plenty of other ways that you can go about your business on Veterans Day. But that's not the point in a way. But anyway, I would say this: if anybody has any comments that they still want to get to to Lynn Barris, I think that it's worthwhile. If you want to send those, Catherine, or I'll send them. I took notes down. I think it's worth it to get it to James, because they are still probably refining what they might be putting on the website or putting on advisories, even though this is in final. I think you can make suggestions now. Yeah.
One possible relatively minor change for the website, I suppose, is that when you open this thing up, it lists all the metro stations that are near the Metro Mall or near the National Mall and gives you directions to each of them. Many of us who are very familiar with the system know what lines all of those stations are on, but many of the people who are coming in for this will not. So they won't necessarily know that Judiciary Square is on the red line and Gallery Place is the green and yellow and red lines. And it would be helpful in this list of things to just mention what lines each of these station services.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess they're assuming that you'll then go to the map, but even then, it's hard to tell. Yeah, okay. Anything else? Deborah. McKenzie, sorry.
I apologize if I'm going to repeat something here. You guys might not. I don't hear so well, and my hearing aid's a little off tonight. So if I'm repeating something, I'm sorry. But one thing about all this, and I don't know if it's been mentioned, but we're talking about people who don't work for the federal government and other people. But there are a lot of out-of-town visitors that this is going to really confuse. I had the same situation. I was here in 2006 as a visitor. on July 4th, my friend who I was dating with, we looked at the Metro website the night before, and she said, here, you're going to take this and this and this, because she was getting me to somewhere because she wasn't going to be able to go with me. So we mapped out how I was going to do it because I had never used Metro before. That day on July 4th, they did something similar. They changed the routes, they canceled the train, they replaced it with whatever. I was totally lost on the system all by myself. When I got back to my friend's house, I was really late for an engagement. She goes, what happened? Can't you even follow directions? I said, they canceled the line. She said, they would never do that. I said, they did. She called and found out they had done that. So my question is, I think you may have asked, is this going on the website at some point? Because I have noticed even in the last year when they've made changes, it's never on the website. So I don't know, you know.
Well, this is, there's definitely a version on the website. There's definitely a version on the website. Now, whether it's up to date or not, I don't know. Carolyn, do you happen to know how that is in sync? In other words, if and as changes are made, is the website kept up to date? I guess if and as changes are made, is the website kept up to date?
Oh, yes. So any changes that are made to this would be could be easily updated on the website.
Okay. Okay. But I didn't look at it today before I came. But I mean, as of yesterday, if you go to the homepage of WMATA.com and you look to the right, it's like a news release, but it's scrolling down, so it's not like the top thing you see when you get there, and there's not a big fat, you know, there's a rotating or moving. Features.
And I mentioned the website, but what people don't realize is a lot of people who are in town for the first time, they've saved up for 5 years for their vacation to D.C. and they're from Idaho or Iowa, they don't have internet access. They don't have a mobile device where they can look and see up-to-date things, and they're looking at maps that are on the stations and they're looking at other things, and that causes a real problem too.
We were told that there would be maps in the station, large maps in the stations, that would, as well as being handed out, that would show this. Yes.
And I would also like to point out that in addition to the maps, that there will be customer service ambassadors in many of the stations that the Veterans Day concert customers will be using, and also our other visitors to the Washington, D.C. area.
That's too late. That's the problem. They've planned ahead. They get there, they get to the station, and now their plans have to completely change because now they found out about it. So that's the problem, is handing things out at the station is too late for some of these folks.
Okay. Candace, and then Deborah Titus.
I actually have a quick question for Barbara, because you take the blue line every day, right? Mm-hmm. So you said the only signage you currently see says Concert for Valor, and that's it. It doesn't say...
That's what the website says, too. It has, where the press releases are, it says the Concert for Valor.
So it doesn't say blue line closed on Tuesday. That's huge. So the fact that it doesn't actually say it anywhere, it should say it, especially at Franconia Springfield, because the people that get there on Tuesday are going to be shocked. And it should already be posted everywhere along the blue line so that people aren't shocked on Tuesday. That would be my thing. I would have assumed by now that you would have seen something that said that.
I think part of it is that the blue line stations aren't closed. Yellow line trains will be running to all stations except for Arlington Cemetery.
It's very confusing.
And that's why they said it's something that Catherine...
Blue turns to yellow.
Yeah, blue turns
like
to
that.
Yellow.
Yeah.
So maybe that it's not closing. It's just that you have two ways to get around the city. You can go from L'Enfant down to Pentagon, which is open.
Right.
You can go from D.C. around... And you can't go the Arlington Cemetery way that day. You cannot get from Roslyn to Pentagon, which are two stations apart. So that was one thing. I think the ambassadors is a fine idea. I don't know, James, if you were talking about throughout the system or just if they are just in the vicinity of the concert, that's probably not enough because it's the people at the ends that are going to need, you know, help too.
Mm-hmm.
not just the vicinity of the concert. It actually stretches out pretty far within the throughout the system. I know that I've also volunteered to be one of those customer service ambassadors, as well as several other staff members who I'm aware of. And they are
not on the blue line,
but I can speak to say that those persons are as far out as Silver Spring and Wheaton and Bethesda. So
they have no impact on them.
Not just in the general D.C. area.
Can I make my last comment?
Hold on just a minute. Bob, and I think Deborah had her plate up, and we'll end with Barbara. On. And if people have other comments or stuff like that, you can send them directly to James. I have some. I'll send them to James, and we will get something back to Lynn tomorrow.
Well, this whole discussion raises for me some questions about communications. And I guess I want to make two points. Is there a mechanism that we can participate in when events like this are about to happen that perhaps we can be used as a focus group, you know, to go, does this make, what?
That's us.
Us, yeah.
We're the focus group.
Yeah. Does this make sense? And we would, you know, establish a timeline, say, you know, when you're having a big event like this, whatever it's, whether it's the Memorial Day motorcycle gangs or group, or whatever they are, you know, or big demonstrations that Metro staff must make a plan available 4 weeks in advance and give us a week to just to eyeball it. Just a thought. My second point is, which goes back to our first presentation on waterproofing the Red Line, and the reason I'm interested in this is, I live on the Red Line. Grosvenor is my station, is my primary station. In addition to the construction plan and the timeline for that, I believe there should be a communications plan accompanying that and a timeline for that. Because, you know, we sure as heck don't want people in the western part of Montgomery County to be informed 2 weeks in advance that their station is going to be closed for the next 3 months. So I think that we can give it some thought, but I'd certainly like to see this group recommend to the Metro Board.
Well, Lorraine is not here tonight, and she's the chair of the Customer Services Committee, and so she's not here to defend herself. I would urge the Customer Services Committee to think about taking this on and to prepare a letter for the RAC to look at it at its next meeting to send to the board about this, because, you know, I did a little bit of research because I went to the National Park Service website, to the permitting group, because one of the things that was said was this was unusual in that Metro was not informed, did not get the usual lead time. Obviously, they know when the 4th of July is, they know when the inauguration is, et cetera, et cetera. And my impression is that they did not have the kind of lead time that would have been appropriate for the National Park Service to issue a permit to 800,000 people. But if you go to the National Park Service permitting, which is very hard to find, by the way, I called several members around the country before getting a number that never worked. But anyway, I went on the website, and in their permitting instructions, they say that the group applying for a permit should be working with the public transit people, and they even have a name and a number of somebody from WMATA, the National Mall Permitting Groups. I don't know. I mean, I'm taking WMATA at its word that for this size of an event, they should have probably known a year ago or 6 months ago, or, you know, they basically have a year to plan the 4th of July and, you know, 4 years to plan the inauguration. So, you know, there's no question but they didn't have appropriate amounts of time. You know, and even one of the board members said, do we ever say, no, we can't do this? You know, in other words, would it have been appropriate for the National Park Service to be told, no, this is not possible? But by that time, they'd already issued the permit. Yeah. So, well, I do think that there's some action required on the part of the RAC. I think I heard Rob Troop say something about a communications plan. But what I think is issue is an effective communications plan, because we should not be sitting here less than 1 week away from the Blue Line closing and there not be word one about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm on the customer service committee.
So please
I'll raise it at the next meeting.
Okay. Frank, Deborah Titus, and then Frank, and that's going to really be the, and Barbara. We're going to move on to something else.
I just want to follow up on what Bob said, you know, using us as a focus group for future things. I think that the problem is a lot more serious than just getting writer feedback, because, you know, this piece of literature was designed by communication professionals, and if communication professionals didn't have, I mean, just in the 5 minutes that people maybe got to review it, there have been so many glaring errors in this, mm-hmm. and so much misinformation. And really, you know, to be honest, I didn't even look at it because I'm not going to the Concert for Valor. You know, so that's what was said, you know, the number one problem with this. But it's, you know, it's very Orwellian. You know, that they don't say anywhere the Blue Line is closing, you know, which would just be the clearest statement in terms of communication effectiveness, what people need to know. So I think all of that is to say, I think that the problem is also, you know, just the general metro problem of you know, whether they're protecting their image or trying to protect their image instead of trying to respond to customer needs.
I personally am very disappointed and sad, because I think that Metro, I think that the customer care plan and thing presentations that we've seen, I thought represented a genuine effort of WMATA to try to do better and to really get it as far as the customer. And Barbara's nice for protecting me, because I was the one who said about the widgets, this is a perfect plan to move widgets. Okay?
Widgets. To save you.
Okay, I mean, it's a good plan for widgets. Okay, so as you say, some widgets have to go, you know, a little bit further to get it, but it's not a good plan for the people. And it, you know, well, don't get me started, I'll get in trouble, okay. Deborah.
I have a question. Because of the confusion in the pamphlet, can we ask the appropriate places to set up announcement on electronic board on every 91 station a few days before? Can we do that? Can somebody make an announcement? The lady left.
Even if they make an announcement that there are going to be changes as a result of this, and please consult this brochure. Because as I said, I think the biggest thing is people are not going to read it thinking it has nothing to do with them. People who are going to be impacted are not going to read it. I think that, yeah, I wrote that down. Bob, and then the last word is Barbara's.
I was going to just say they ought to be making announcements. If the Blue Line is not going to be open, they should be making announcements on the Blue Line starting immediately to let people know that next there will be one day when it's not open, period.
As well as announcements that day if you're heading in the direction of the southwest quadrant of the entire city, then saying, by the way, if you're going to try to get to X, you can't go that way. You've got to go this way or something. Or whatever. One, just a quick comment is about the Thursday prior. It is a ways ahead, but Friday has pretty low ridership. A lot of people that don't come in on Fridays. There are some people who don't come in on Mondays, but I think it's just better for people to know the week prior than it is the day prior, especially if they find out on their way home when they're, you know, strolling through the station. I absolutely agree with the audio thing. I think that can help. That can help. The last thing I want to say was kind of back to the more general blue, blue people. You know, that one thing I've read 100 times is that a lot of people in this area make decisions of where they're going to live by their access to metro stations. And there are some people that may not want to move in Red Territory or Bethesda or Grosvenor Territory. If they knew that that was coming up at that time, they might take a different time. And a lot of people, including me, may not have moved to Blue Territory if I'd have known what was coming. So even now, it would be a good time to be letting the people know what this means, or whenever we're sure when this red line work is going to happen, then we need to be starting to communicate that so that people can make decisions about when people come to visit or when they leave town or things like that around it. That's end of my preaching.
Okay. Well, I think the bottom line is obviously this is not a satisfactory
I think response. This is about as least satisfactory to anything I've been listening to in the last couple of years that I've been here.
So, anyway, let us move on to just a brief conversation about the Metro Bus public hearings. Several of us attended their reports are summarized in the in your packet, and I wanted to know if there was anybody who had something to say to highlight. Deborah wrote something. I did. I think a couple of other people did. If there's anything you want to say to highlight any observations, reflections as a result of the hearing. Deborah. Okay. Barbara.
No, I think it's here. It's here already.
Okay. Okay. So.
Oh, no, I'll take that back.
Okay.
I attended two, and Mary Hines chaired one, and Tom Downs chaired the other, and Jim Hamry was the presenter for both. Mm-hmm. And there may be people on the board or on the staff that can occasionally make us unhappy. Those three people aren't them. Those, Mary and Tom do a fabulous job of making people understand that this is not just a formality, these hearings. They want to know their feedback. It will be used. It will be heard. They're wonderful at doing that. They really are. They put up with a lot of people saying, well, I heard that you're going to do this, and you shouldn't do that, and well, and that's not what's even planned, but they hear it and they listen and they're wonderful ambassadors to the people that attend those hearings to know that there are people like that running parts of this organization.
Okay, let us go on. There's only one. Are there any committee? Well, Karen Lynch is not here to make a governance report. So I will just say simply that where we are is we expect that the board will take up the issue of our bylaws and hopefully approve them at their November session. We have not gotten any feedback that there was something major that bothered them, so I expect to have that approved at the end of November. Deliverables that we had and we'll be sending out for comment is that in anticipation that they will approve the bylaws which establish standing committees, the RAC leadership team, which is in fact the governance committee, is coming up with descriptions of each of those committees, so we'll be sending those out for comments and we'll have those at the December meeting. And the other thing that was discussed at that governance committee, which you'll hear about when we talk about it a little bit later, is the orientation and membership mentoring discussion. But that's pretty much it for the public hearing reports. The WMATA Budget and Finance Committee, there was a meeting. We used materials that had been developed by Fred Walker and other people, and we looked at what this is about for the new people is this. we were interested in looking at the possibility of fare simplification. If you look at Metro's fare structure and the various ways that you can get on and pay and exit the Metro system, whether by bus, rail, smart trip card, all the various permutations and combinations, we were looking at the possibility of simplifying the system, the fare system, to looking at other transit systems. When we got to the actual study, we decided that now was not the time, and we did not have the resources to look at a complete overhaul of the fare structure. So we were only going to look at those systems that were based, like Metro, on a distance model. And when you look at the systems that are based on a distance model, they're relatively few. And what we decided that was doable for right now was to look not necessarily at the fare structure system, but at the fare information system. If you think about when you go into the Metro Rail and there's this, what's it called, fares from the station sign, as Catherine pointed out, it is like a masterpiece of obfuscation. Because for one thing, it lists the fares, based on a smart trip, correct? And
I'd say that's no longer correct.
Huh?
They changed the fares so that they reflect paper fare card prices. That was done with the last version.
Well, in the stations, they are not. They still have those same signs up. Clarify what you're saying, John.
Based on the feedback that we had gotten that staff had gotten from station managers and other frontline staff, mm-hmm. the fare charts that are on the fare machines and I believe also the ones that are on the station manager kiosks now reflect the dollar extra price of a paper fare card, since those are people that most need to know the exact fare, whereas people using smart trip cards can throw, you know, generally our regular riders, they can throw $20 in their card and we'll use it. So effective with the July 1st or June 30th, 2014 fare change, the prices on the machines, and I believe, though, we can check the prices
well,
on the
check tonight,
kiosk tonight. Reflect those higher fares. And
okay,
they say
so they
take
reflect.
$2 off, you know, take a buck off if you're traveling with Smart Trip.
Okay. So that was mainly our main takeaway, that the fare simplification was something that was probably too big to tackle in the thing of fare restructuring, but that we would maybe continue to look at through the next year as Metro prepares for budget hearings at the end of this year, at the end of 2015, looking at ways that they could simplify. But quite frankly, we took a quick look at some of the other systems, and we looked at the possibility of doing away with peak fares, and we just didn't see any, you know, many opportunities to make a dent in that. And if what John says is correct, maybe it's just a question of some signs not being updated, and we can all kind of take a look at that tonight. Are there any other reports from, I don't remember anything from any of the other meetings I attended. Is there anything from customer service? Is there anything from PPP? Okay. Well, what we want to do next is to talk about, you know, we might very well get out of here early, RAC orientation and membership mentoring discussion. Now, I'm going to turn this over to Candace, but one of the things that we realize is a real shortfall. It comes up at every leadership team meeting, and we haven't, frankly, made a whole lot of headway on it this year, but we're going to plug away at it, is that one of the best ways we think to engage members is by having some sort of organized orientation. To that end, we're definitely going to be asking people for bios, and that'll be coming out separately, and it will be something that will be just shared internally with RAC members. It won't go on the WMATA website for the world to see. So that will be happening, and then I'm going to turn it over to Candace to talk about any other orientation progress we've made.
Okay, so I have some documentation in front of me, and so from what I understand, we've had orientation in 2010 and in 2013. And so they're pretty comprehensive, and so I have a lot of documentation. And so what we really need right now is a small group of people to sort of get together and decide, okay, this is what we need to tell people when they're coming in to the RAC. So, and we plan on having this at the beginning of the year in January so that everyone sort of knows what's going on from the get-go. And so if you have any questions, you could basically ask them during that session. And it seems as though most sessions last about 2 hours, and we would have to decide if we want to do it as a part of this meeting or a separate meeting or a separate event in which we get together and we sort of discuss, you know, different things. Like, for example, in this orientation session, they went through basically, they gave an overview of the Metro Board, the Riders Advisory Council. They talked about the relationship to Metro. Then they talked about the Metro budget and exactly like the organizational chart and the things that go into it. They also gave an overview of Metro Rail, Metro Bus, Metro Access. And then they talked about customer service, communications, and they gave a marketing overview. So they went, it was very comprehensive. And so I think we need to do the same thing. So if anyone is interested in helping me out, we have 2 months to get together this orientation. And I think we have most, if not all, of the information we need. We just have to decide exactly how we're going to disseminate it and when we're going to do it. So just let me know. So if anybody wants to volunteer now, that'd be great.
I just have a suggestion. I don't think that due to certain time constraints that I would be able to participate, but I think that like 5 minutes on parliamentary procedure would be really helpful.
Again,
just
like a refresher?
To start with, yeah. Okay.
You know, we had a session in October on parliamentary procedure, which was interesting.
And
was,
I still have...
Good as a part of orientation.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right, good point.
And then
very
we can include,
point.
She gave us a cheat sheet during that session. And so I think it'd be good for everyone to just sort of have it with them when they come to the meetings. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Anybody dying to?
I just need
volunteer.
One or two people.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
Great. I will email you.
Okay. Any announcements? Are people generally aware that the membership application period, if you're on the list of people who are interested in being reappointed, you need to get that in by
the 7th,
Friday the 7th at 5 p.m. That's it.
Can we ask about the applications? James, do you have a sense of having an abundance of people applying? It's just a few days, 2 days from the deadline.
Yes. The last time that I downloaded applications that had been submitted, we had approximately 150 applications for all three jurisdictions total.
You have any idea about the jurisdictional breakdown?
I don't have those exact numbers, but we do have more. The most applications that we received are from the District of Columbia, followed by Virginia, and then Maryland.
And I guess, as you all realize, one of the things that happened at the Metro Board meeting is that they have announced a slate of candidates for new positions on the Metro Board Executive Committee, and so the likely new chair will be Mortimer Downing, and the vice chair, Mortimer Downing, from D.C. He's a federal person, and Alvin Nicholson from Prince George's County is the vice chair. Catherine Hudgens is the second vice chair from Virginia. And Tom Downs will remain a part of the executive committee as the immediate past president. But of course, since there's been an election in Washington, D.C., that might affect who obviously Muriel Bowser, I don't think, is going to drop into the Lamada board meeting as when she has some spare time in her duties as the mayor. So there will probably be changes on the Lamada board, I would assume, as well. Catherine.
I just wanted to make one request, and if I'm the only one who has this request, then feel free to ignore it. But with regard to the agenda, the upcoming meetings section at the bottom, okay. I'm wondering if it would be possible to just list the start time for all of the meetings. It says all meetings begin at 6:30 unless otherwise noted, but most of them actually begin at an otherwise noted time. So
okay.
Rather than saying they start at 6:30 except for this one, this one, this one, this one, and this one,
maybe okay, just put down
just what, say what time okay. they do start.
Okay, good point. Okay. Anything else? It looks like we have run out of topics and steam, and I'm all for adjourning.
This comment is going to be very random, but it's been, I guess, because I've been walking a lot up and down 14th Street lately, I have noticed that they've tried to change, like, the bus service, but we're still, I don't know sort of when or where or how to sort of address this issue, and I know that it might be more of a DDOT issue than a WMATA issue, but I remember at one point we talked about the traffic patterns in Columbia Heights and the fact that now the time is up. They had like a 5-year waiting period or something like that, and so now they could go back and look at the traffic pattern and see if they could change it to make it a little bit better. So I don't know if it's something that we want to address or deal with.
I think we should do? I think, you know, Matt, the head of DDOT, who is the alternate director on Washington, is Brown, Matt Brown.
Oh, yeah, Matt Brown, yeah.
I think, I mean, he's very approachable, so okay. I think you could either approach him or approach Sam Zimbabwe, who is his, in effect, his deputy.
Okay.
And
Sam was here, right?
Yes, he made a presentation to the triple, did he make a presentation
here.
To the RAC?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he would be the perfect person to follow up with on that.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I asked him about it, and he didn't really have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Just thought I'd bring it up. Okay. Sorry for the randomness.
Anything else? Any other random thoughts?
Yeah, it's, I do.
Not the blue light again, right?
No, not
okay.
The blue
light. And I'm not making light of it because
no.
It's not to be taken lightly.
Because it's November, we have, one more meeting. And I can't remember the exact timeline, but is it January that people express that they're interested in running for positions?
This is kind of an interesting thing. If you recall, those of you who were around at the beginning of the year, we wrestled with this in the bylaws and we finally didn't change it. So what's going to happen is that in December, people's appointments will expire unless they're reappointed. People who are eligible for, whose terms expire will expire at the end of December unless they're reappointed. And they'll probably know, maybe not by our December meeting, I don't think. Do you remember when the board takes up the RAC reappointments? Do they take it up in November or December? I think they take it up in December. Right. In other words, the RAC reappointments. In other words, they take effect in January, so the board is going to appoint and reappoint new RAC members at its December meeting. Yeah. Right, that's
right.
What I meant. Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
so what happens is that at the January meeting, if you might recall, you have the situation where you can say, "Hi, I'm Carol Walker. I'm running for RAC chair. Will you vote for me?" In other words, you know, the January meeting is where you hold with the first time newly appointed members report, and we hold elections. And for reasons that I won't bother to go into, it seemed like it did make sense. So what might happen is, when is the December board meeting? It's probably early because of the holidays.
It's usually a week.
Thursday.
Is it not early?
I think it is.
It may be early this month because of the.
It's a week earlier.
I think, yeah.
So it would be, okay, so the board meets on the 18th, the appointments are made. So what has been done in the past is some people who are interested in running will get in touch with, will be able to communicate with both perhaps the new people as well as the existing people and let them know if they're interested in running. But usually what happens is before the January meeting, people kind of express their interest in running for office. but the election will be held at the January meeting. And I guess this is a good time for me to let you know that I am one of those candidates that's up for reappointment, and I will not be requesting reappointment. So I will, another officer will be presiding at the January meeting. So, anyway. But anyway, that's basically what happens.
Carol, shouldn't you tell people they're not allowed to spend more than $10,000 running for office?
Well, you know, I'm still stinging over the $50, right? Given to my aunt, but anyway. but anyway, so that's the way that's run. So what will happen is people who are really interested in holding office will probably be able to communicate with their cohorts between the 18th, when everybody's appointed, and the meeting where the elections will be held. And basically, most people just submit a nominating statement that you can submit and even give at that particular meeting. So, and officers are elected every year. So, anything else? I hear a motion to adjourn. Unless there's no objection, the meeting is adjourned.